I can just imagine him standing there, leaning against the wall outside the royal palace, his chest heaving as he breathed deeply, trying to recover from the almost marathon distance run that he had just completed across the great plain that lies between Mount Carmel and the city of Jezreel, where he now waited patiently for King Ahab to arrive. As I said earlier, the plain would have become a real quagmire within a very short time because of the heavy rain after almost 3 years of drought. Ahab discovered that to his cost, probably as his chariot struggled to keep going through the mud that resulted. Elijah waited patiently, expecting to hear from the king as soon as he had got washed and changed from the day's activities. Surely after all that he had witnessed on Mount Carmel, Ahab would come to his senses and take a different course from now on. The Lord had dispelled the myth of Baal. He had shown Baal to be no god at all. The Lord is God, the people had declared after the contest. Oh, surely now Israel as a nation could put behind it the tragic events of the past and begin to build a new future based on truth and faith in the Lord. The prophets of Baal were dead and gone. Surely Ahab would now bring about religious reform. Surely he would sweep away the shrines, the images of Baal, and restore the worship of the Lord, the one true God. But politicians the world over don't like doing U-turns, do they? Political opponents, commentators, and journalists seem to equate a U-turn with a weak turn, which makes it even more difficult for a public figure to admit that things need to change from the way they were going because they've discovered there's a better way. Elijah waited and waited. More and more people began to gather round him as they returned from Carmel, waiting to see what was going to happen next. It was still teeming, and Elijah began to feel cold. Water dripped off his chin and ran down the back of his neck. He tried to take shelter behind the wall, but it didn't do much good. The rain was so heavy. His young disciple arrived and stood beside him, and he waited and waited. Eventually, a soldier appeared at the gate. "A message from the queen," he announced. "May the gods strike me dead if by this time tomorrow I don't do the same thing to you that you did to their prophets." Well, what happened next has been a matter of great debate among Bible translators and commentators alike. If you're using the NIV, you'll see in the main text in verse 3 that it says, "Elijah was afraid." Though, if you look in the footnote, you'll see an alternative reading that says, "Elijah saw." I think the Authorized Version has it much better. It says, "And when he saw that, he arose and went for his life and came to Beersheba." The Hebrew has the word "saw," not the word "afraid." And the word "went" or "walked," not "ran." Though I have to point out one more thing. The word "that" is in italics in the authorized version. If you have it in front of you there, you'll perhaps notice that. The word "that" in verse 3 is in italics. And when you see a word in italics in the authorized version, it means the word has been added by the translators to help make sense in English of the Hebrew. But it's not there in the Hebrew. And on this occasion, I don't think it's needed. Looking at the original text word for word, to me what we're being told here is something quite different from the usual idea of a man frightened out of his wits and running for his life. Remember, this was the man who had just called down fire from heaven in the face of several thousand people. Would he really be likely then to turn into a quivering, fearful wreck at a threat from someone like Jezebel, cruel, evil woman as she was? Mind you, a man friend recently joked with me saying, "I'm not afraid of any man and very few women." Even so, I don't think Jezebel was one such woman for Elijah. What I think we're being told here is that Elijah heard how Jezebel reacted to what Ahab had told her about all that had happened on Carmel. And rather than running scared, as so many seem to think, something hugely significant dawned on Elijah. He saw that nothing was going to change. No U-turn was about to take place. The message was clear. The Baal prophets might be dead, but as Margaret Thatcher once declared, the lady's not for turning. Ahab was the same old Ahab as he'd always been, despite the events of Carmel that he, remember, had witnessed personally. As long as he and Jezebel were in charge, or maybe that should be as long as Jezebel was in charge, nothing was going to change in Israel. And when Elijah saw the reality of the situation, what did he do? He turned on his heel and walked and kept walking. I believe he went not so much in fear of his life, but to take stock of his life and leave Ahab and Jezebel far behind for a time. Oh yes, he was getting offside, as we would say, escaping the evil that spilled out of the palace and the blatant refusal to listen to the message that he had been sent to deliver as the Lord's prophet. But I don't believe Elijah was running scared. I really don't believe that. Elijah had had enough. He had reached the end of his tether. He needed to get away to somewhere he could think things over in solitude and safety and reflect on where all of this left him with regard to the future. Many of us are familiar with the phrase, "from John O'Groats to Land's End," aren't we? It refers, of course, to the entire length of mainland United Kingdom, from its northernmost point at John O'Groats in Scotland to its southernmost point at Land's End in Cornwall, England. Well, there's a similar phrase in the Old Testament about the United Kingdom of Israel and Judah. The phrase is "from Dan to Beersheba," referring to its entire length from its northernmost point at Dan to the southernmost point at Beersheba, which is where Elijah and his young disciple made a stop off. The opposite end of the country, if you like, over 100 miles from Jezreel, but more importantly, in the southern kingdom of Judah, where Jehoshaphat was king, not Ahab. Safe territory. It would have taken them 5 or 6 days on foot. But Elijah didn't stop there. He headed on another day journey, about 20 miles or so, into the Negev desert, alone. I don't get much sense of panic here, do you? This was all cool, calm, and collected. This was the desert his forefathers had lived in for 40 years before entering the promised land. What better a place for Elijah to go than where so many of his ancestors had lived and died? Because they'd had enough of living in conditions that felt worse than they had been in Egypt. Is that how Elijah felt? Tired of living under a regime that showed no signs of turning away from Baalism, despite the incredible events of Carmel, where people wanted to turn back to the Lord, but Ahab and Jezebel wouldn't let them. It sounds like it from verse 4. We're told sitting under the shade of a broom tree, not so much of a tree as a large bush. Elijah says, I've had enough, Lord. Let me die. I'm no better than my ancestors. Broken, Elijah fell asleep. Now, if he had thought for a moment about where he was, maybe he would have seen things differently. Why do I say that? Well, broom bushes are common in the desert. Where other plants shrivel and die, broom bushes seem to thrive. Their seeds can remain viable in the soil for several years until the seed coat wears down through the heat of the sun and the soil, and they germinate into new life, which is why brooms are regarded as symbols of renewal. If Elijah had thought for a moment about what he was sitting under, he might have seen things in a different light. Now, that's easy for me to say. But remember, when Elijah arrived at the broom bush, he was exhausted mentally, physically, spiritually. What should have been a great victory for the Lord and Elijah over Baal and his so-called prophets turned into Elijah seeing that nothing was going to change. He had risked everything for nothing. At least that's how it felt to him. If anyone needed to be renewed, it was Elijah. And here he was, asleep under a bush that symbolized that very thing, renewal. If the bush was in bloom, Elijah would have seen thousands of tiny white flowers and smelt their soothing, honey-like fragrance that no doubt would aid sleep. And while he slept, the Lord was at work. Again, as he had been in the past, providing food, just as he had done at Kerith and Zarephath. This time, freshly baked bread and a jar of water. Exhaustion soon had Elijah sleeping again, only for the Lord to waken him sometime later for more food and a message. Eat up. You have a long journey ahead. What journey? The journey to another mountain, Mount Horeb, also known as Mount Sinai, also known as the Mountain of God, the Covenant Mountain. where Moses had received the Ten Commandments. This was a place where people met God in person, where God came down to meet people. And so it would be for Elijah, strengthened and renewed by the food provided in the desert for him by the Lord. He began walking again, reaching Horeb after a journey in which he continued to wrestle with his thoughts and his weariness. And God willing, we'll join him there next Sunday evening. But you know, far from being a negative experience for Elijah, and far from being evidence of failure and fear, this episode, I believe, is one that should bring real encouragement to every single one of us who have committed our lives to God through faith in the Lord Jesus Christ. Elijah left Israel and headed to Judah because he saw that nothing was going to change so far as Israel's disregard and contempt for the Lord was concerned. He was tired and he was fed up. Tired to the point of giving up, just like his ancestors. So he decided the Lord might as well dish out the same fate to him as he had done to them and let him die in the desert because he was really no better than they were. They had complained against the Lord and they had wanted to go back to Egypt because they thought they were better looked after there than they were in the wilderness and in the desert. Despite the Lord saying, I have a land into which I want to bring you. And the spies who came back were able to say, it's a land that flows with milk and honey. Though, of course, there were more spies who said, oh, no. You know, the people are like giants. But you see, the Lord knew different from Elijah. He knew that what Elijah needed most at that point was renewal and refreshment. The Lord's diagnosis wasn't fear or failure, but fatigue. How many times do we as Christian men, women, and young people feel like giving up because we are fed up with the way things are around us, with so many people who have little time or thought for God? Fatigued from trying to persuade people that there is a better way to live, God's way. Yet they refuse to listen to the Bible's message about turning back to God. Oh, it's so easy for us to feel like saying, I've had enough, Lord. I can't do this anymore. I feel like I'm knocking my head against a brick wall. Just forget about me. Count me out. But the Lord won't let us go. He won't let us go. Isaiah 40:31 tells us, those who hope in the Lord will renew their strength. A Christian is someone who hopes in the Lord, which means our confidence is in him, not the world around us, not in ourselves, certainly not in ourselves. And just as the Lord renewed Elijah, so he gives us strength beyond our own resources so that we can run and not be weary, walk without collapsing under the weight of the world's challenges. But there's more. As a famous comedian from Northern Ireland would say, there's more. The Lord personally renews us. Personally renews us. His Spirit brings his grace into our lives in a real and personal way. Renewed. by the Lord inwardly, day by day. Isn't that what Paul prays for his fellow believers in Ephesians 3:16? That out of his glorious riches, he may strengthen you with power through his Spirit in your inner being, so that Christ may dwell in your hearts through faith. Our faith in Jesus enables God to be with us in a personal way, strengthening us by his Spirit, so that it's as if Christ is actually living inside of us in person. And so in those moments when we feel like giving up because we're tired of living in a world that thumbs its nose at God, when we feel as if we're living in a spiritual desert, the Lord personally provides what we need to be renewed and strengthened as we hope in him, so we may continue to live for him and in him to his glory. That for me is the message that comes from this episode in Elijah's life and experience. Not one of failure, but one of renewal, where the Lord himself comes and gives Elijah what he needs to rise up, to walk on, and to live for God. And he can do the same for us. For he is the Lord. He does not change. The same yesterday, today, and forever. So trust him. Turn to him. If you're tired and weary, tell him. And you will find him coming to meet you under the broom bush to renew you, just as he did Elijah. Let's pray together.